If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
An exceptionally great newscast today.
Thank you so very much. An exceptionally great sportscast by our own Andy Mazur.
Thank you so much. I thought it was fine.
Perfectly fine.
I listened to Hamp and OB yesterday.
We had a good time yesterday.
And you.
Yeah. And they were very surprisingly, well, not really surprising because what the Bears did, they were very giddy. We didn't have too many explosions.
Those are my favorite parts of the show. Honestly, yeah, that's the only reason I listen.
We had a couple, you know, when it just comes to looking back at last year caused more consternation than anything.
Love that when OB gets mad.
Yeah, he was slamming the table a couple of times. luckily for us, the equipment that's lodged underneath that table in Studio A, which is where you are right now, that did not fall from its holster there again.
I can't even tell you how much I love when he starts yelling. And Hamp is the measured one.
Yes.
He's the voice of reason.
He is the voice of reason.
And then every once in a while, you seem like you're just trying not to be hit by any furniture.
Correct. I stay in my neutral corner. I put up the shield, the plexiglass in there.
Very, very, very enjoyable.
Yeah, it was a fun show. And, it's always fun to talk about the Bears doing things correctly. We haven't had a chance to do that in a few years.
Yeah, I like that. Schwani, I enjoyed your story about the city cleanup.
Yes, yes. Good day for it, too.
Grabbed my attention today.
Good day for it. We've got a sunny day in store and a little warmer, 80 for tomorrow.
Doesn't it seem like we should be doing something like that, giving back?
Yes.
Not that we give 4 hours of quality entertainment every Sunday morning. We give and give and give until there's nothing left to give.
It is our contribution to the industry in which we work.
But wouldn't it be nice if we went outside and picked up some gum wrappers? Or,
all right.
How much actual work is involved now? But before I commit to this, how much actual work is there?
Oh, there's quite a bit, really. Oh. You know, people out with bags and so forth, picking up the trash. And,
I saw people doing that yesterday. I saw people... Mm-hmm.
Who's part of this Friends of the Park.
I like that idea.
Yeah. Yeah, 2,000 people out there in total, taking care of 150 parks. And I know there are various cleanup days along the beaches here in Chicago and also along the Indiana Dunes. Quite a bit of volunteer activity out there for that.
I think I would love to do that.
Mm-hmm. We should do the show that way sometime.
I think that would be great.
Well, hey, that'd be a good summer event.
Helpful, you know, clean things up.
I agree. I totally agree.
I could make refreshments for everybody while you guys work.
You could make a whole tray of your mother's deviled eggs recipe.
Oh, yeah. That's what you want out in the hot sun while you're...
I mean, I never got any.
Cleaning up the parks. Diana Ross, of course, Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie.
Stevie Wonder, I think, also.
Stevie's in there. Paul Simon.
Is Ray Charles in this?
Yes, he is.
Oh, yeah. He had a solo.
Huey Lewis, Cyndi Lauper, Kenny Rogers.
For some reason, Dan Aykroyd.
Yep, Cyndi Lauper.
I'm looking at Kenny Loggins. Oh, wait, there you can hear Ray Charles.
Yeah, there he is. No mistaking that voice.
Kenny Rogers, Tina Turner.
Tell you what, still, if you love that song and you want to know more about it, I cannot highly recommend enough
that documentary.
The Netflix documentary.
Yeah, that documentary is amazing.
The Greatest Night in Pop. And how they pulled it all off.
In no time at all.
With no email.
It was virtually ad lib.
Yeah.
Listen to Stevie. So good. Bruce Springsteen, number one.
With very good reason, too.
40 years ago, it was number one for a month.
Oh, that was a great song.
All the money went to feed starving people around the world. And, yeah, wow, what a concept. The radio station I worked at the time, WCLR.
You worked at CLR?
Chicago's Light Rock.
I didn't know you were there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you were up and down the dial.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't hold a job. That was nothing but trouble.
You didn't sing "I Am the Morning DJ" at WOLD, did you?
No, but my U-Haul trailer was always handy, though. that's where I worked then, and I remember, I can't believe it's 40 years ago. Seems like yesterday. It was a big deal about whether we should trim the song down.
Yeah.
Because wasn't it like 6 minutes
long? It was like 7 minutes. Album version was about 7 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, and the program director at the time, I don't remember who it was or whatever, but, you know, some radio genius.
I think I know who it was.
Hey, we got to get this down to about 3 minutes.
I think we might have edited it also.
We got to get this. We can play more hits that way.
At Fire. We played it at FYR also.
Yeah.
But I did not know you were at CLR for a time then.
Light Rock.
Yeah.
Less talk.
Less talk. And that's all we do is talk.
Short versions of songs that shouldn't be edited.
Well, that's nothing new. I mean, they've been editing the songs on, Top 40 Radio for years.
But I was, I don't want to brag, but I was a whiz on the way that you edited things back in those days. Was literally with a razor blade and the special splicing tape, super thin tape. And we were talking about this before we went on the air. You'd put a little mark with a grease pencil on the recording tape, and then you slice it with the razor blade and put things together. So they said, "Dean, you're pretty good at that. Why don't you try to edit it?" And I did, and I guess it was fine, except you left out half the artists.
I was just going to say, what artists did you leave out?
Whoever I didn't like. I don't remember.
That would be a tough choice to make, considering the people that are in that song.
Well, the decision was ridiculous.
they never came out with a single version of it?
Probably.
They did.
Yeah. Probably did, but...
I'm sure that they figured out probably one of the choruses was cut out.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
I guess so.
Toward the end, or they just faded it.
Yeah.
Just did a fade.
I think we didn't know how iconic it was, or certainly would become. And we just thought, hey, man, we got to cut this down.
Got to hear more from Lionel Richie.
We've got to get one more Neil Diamond song in there in the rotation.
In the light rotation.
We've got to get a little more light rock in our mixture. But don't talk, because it's less talk.
Just give the call letters.
I wasn't there long.
Really?
After all of your editing skills, and they said, well, we've decided to make a change.
Just nothing but a troublesome employee. I think they realized my value.
Well, that's one station where we did not work together.
No.
So...
that was a big deal. That was way up in Skokie.
Yeah, they were off of Dempster, I believe.
Dempster and Grosse Pointe Road.
Yes, yeah. Nice studios, though.
Right behind a gas station and a liquor store.
Oh, perfect. One-stop shop.
I used to go to that liquor store all the time. I know that sounds bad. I used to go.
I wonder why.
I went. Maybe that's why I didn't last there that long.
I wasn't going to say it, but...
No, because they sold Green River.
Oh, really?
At the this best liquor store. It's now a Binney's. I forget. It was called something else then. It was like an independent liquor store back in the day.
I think it was that Foremost?
Might have been
Foremost Liquors.
I think it might have been Foremost.
Yeah, it might have been. But I remember I would go there and get an actual glass bottle quart.
Oh, yes.
Of Green River.
Did they sell it cold?
No, they didn't.
Oh, okay.
I would have to come back to the station and pilfer ice cubes to put into my Green River.
Oh, man. Green River.
Was that your beverage of choice when you were on the air?
Yeah, it was.
That was just pure green sugar.
Pure, nothing but sugar. Yep.
So good.
Sugar and a green dye. That's it.
Yep. Is there anything better in life, really?
They used to have that in the fountain at Wolfie's.
Oh.
I would go with my grandparents that lived right down the street from there on Peterson and Devon area. And, yeah, fill up the little styrofoam cup with some ice shards and put that little Green River in there. Oh, it was so good.
The ice shards?
What a great summer drink.
Yeah, ice shards or crushed ice?
Yeah, the crushed stuff, yes.
Oh, that's heaven. That's heaven right there.
Boy.
I think we need to go find some Green River.
So I have a question.
Yes, sir.
When you were doing the editing.
Yes, Mr. Schwann.
On the apparatus at WCLR, were you using the Scully opened reels, the X5-203?
You don't even know what you're talking about. Even now, finally, it's gotten to this point, even you don't know what you're talking about.
Those machines were great, though. With the servo motor. You could just toggle back and forth and edit.
You are crazy. This is the new portion of our program that we call Only Schwanny and I Know What We're Talking About.
And there is no less talk here either.
Yeah, we don't care. It's actually more talk.
More talk.
And nobody understands what we're talking about. So it makes it even better. This may as well be a foreign language broadcast that we're doing.
To some it is.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Well, I love to tell stories about the good old days.
But we did. They were, I don't know, maybe this is, it's probably too inside, you know, the industry. People in radio get it and they understand it. But they were these massive reel-to-reel tape recorders.
10.5-inch reels in diameter.
Yeah, massive. I mean, these were like the industrial, not what you'd have at home to, you know, play recordings at home, which surprisingly a lot of people had. But these were like, you know, the industrial ones that all radio stations had. And, man, you sat behind that machine. It was like you were Beethoven or something, conducting music. It was fantastic. And now we do it all. Now it's all done digitally.
Yep.
Boom, it's like boom, 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 five buttons.
And if you make a mistake, you can just go back.
And you
That's
undo
the
it.
Cool thing yeah. about digital editing. Yeah. If you make a mistake,
yeah. there's an undo
all
button.
You do is yep. undo, and you're right back to try it over again. Yeah. yeah.
But back in our day,
you made a mistake, you had to re-record the whole right. thing.
You had to re-record the whole thing and start over with your super sharp razor blade.
Yep.
Yep. Those were the days.
Yeah, they were. They were.
From the text line, 815, Green River is now owned by the Sprecher Company in Milwaukee.
Huh. That's good root beer.
And sold at my local Ace Hardware store, it says.
Really?
Really.
You ever had Sprecher's root beer?
I have. It's delicious.
It's wonderful.
I love a nice root beer.
With ice shards in it.
Oh, yeah. Love the shards.
Yeah, what's the deal with that? Why?
I don't know. It's just a taste
thing. Why are shards
thing?
Or crushed ice, why is that
different
more,
from the cubes?
More delicious than the cubes.
It's, I don't know. It's a psychological thing.
Melina and I have this fight all the time because she likes the cubed, and I can't wait to get the, our fridge makes
the dispenser.
Yeah, the shredded ice. Or the, I call it shards. And usually what happens is it gets all over the floor.
Right.
Yeah.
Good for Otis.
Exactly.
Otis the dog.
Exactly right.
Good morning, 224 area code. Just wanted to let you know I enjoy Dean's Sunday morning show. You guys are very entertaining. Well, that's nice.
Very nice. Thank you.
Yeah. Dean, it was Gold Standard Liquors.
Gold Standard, okay.
That was on foremost. Dempster. I remember I was there. No wonder I didn't last at that station. I was at that liquor store all the time. They must have thought I was Otis Campbell in that book. Again, only things that Schwann. And then he went back. Andy's heard the joke so many times.
Yeah, I feel like I know.
Andy doesn't know what we're talking about, but he's heard the joke so many times.
And then you walked back into the station going, I'm sorry, I hurt you, mother. Oh,
Lord.
847 area code. Looked up pictures of your show today. And never realized how handsome Dave Schwann is.
Wow.
Hey.
Why is it that you've never mentioned this?
I didn't. You just made my whole day there. Thank you so much.
Why have we never mentioned how handsome Schwann is?
You know, it's just a gross oversight on our part.
You know, we see him all the time.
I thought you were going to say
a gross overstatement.
No, I think we're just so used to it. We take his looks for granted.
It's like when you were, if you know, the people who work with George Clooney, they don't even know the handsomeness that's around them. So, I guess Schwanny's an okay-looking guy.
Well, thank you so very much. That's very nice of you to say.
If you overlooked the I voted sticker that he's had on for...
And the members-only jacket.
And the members-only jacket. But if you can overlook a few things, he's a catch. He's a catch, that one. 708 area code.
I forgot to wear my PF Flyers shoes, my sneakers today.
I wish I had a pair of PF Flyers. Yeah. Do they still make those?
I don't know. I don't think so. But I can remember seeing the ad on TV and telling my parents, you can run faster and jump higher.
Yeah.
Then you go to the store and they go, yeah, right.
Yeah. I don't know about your parents. My parents were not buying that.
No, neither did mine. No.
The gym shoes you have are fine. The sneakers, I think.
The sneakers
you have are fine. You don't need new sneakers.
That's what we called them. Yeah.
Yeah, I had Pro Keds. Those were mine.
Oh, those were fun.
That's Highline.
Yeah. Pro Keds from Lamb's Shoe Store in Gulf Mill Shopping Center.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly, but because I was the fourth of four boys, almost everything that I wore up until the age about 15 was owned by somebody else first. An older brother wore it before I did.
Hand-me-downs, in other words?
Yeah, I don't know about the shoes, but definitely everything else.
Shirts, sweaters.
I couldn't wait till I got my first job and I earned my own money that I could be the first person to wear a shirt or... Like, wow, nobody else has worn this. This doesn't have patches all over it.
Walk into your where you were working and say, I bought this shirt.
Yeah.
This is mine.
You know what? You got to learn the value of a dollar.
Exactly.
708 area code. What is the name of the We Are the World documentary you're talking about?
Greatest Night in Pop.
What channel can you watch it on? Well, I think
it's Netflix.
Is it still on Netflix?
I believe it is, yes.
Okay.
But what channel is it?
get out your rabbit ears and I'll tell you.
It's on Spectrum, Schwann. check it out on Spectrum. look at the time already.
I was going to say.
Yeah. We'll take a break then, shall we?
Fine.
Sure.
Right. Fine.
Let's take a little break. Let's take a little stretch, a little break. And Schwanny, I'm sure, has a very entertaining far-flung forecast.
I have a very important far-flung forecast today.
Okay. Want to give us any hints?
A day that made a very big difference in the health and well-being of people around the world.
Wow. That is important.
Mm-hmm. Stay tuned.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, moms and dads, kids of all ages, it's time for America's favorite, the far-flung forecast. Our weekly compendium of fascinating facts, all presented to us through the skillful eye of Dave Schwann.
Oh, my goodness.
That was nice.
Really, that was a very nice build-up.
Wasn't that nice?
That was very nice. It was.
I'm drunk on Green River.
Plenty of sugar to go around there. Well, thank you very much, Dean. That was very kind of you. And good morning, everybody. Get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices. We head to McLean, Virginia today. McLean, Virginia is rather a wealthy community, and not all that far from Washington, D.C., population around 50,000. And also has been around for about 125 years. But McLean, Virginia is also the site of an elementary school, Franklin Sherman Elementary School.
Is this going to depress me?
No. 74 years ago yesterday.
This is going to be some sad story.
No, it isn't. If you would let me continue.
Wow.
This is a very inspiring story.
Okay.
Students at the Franklin Sherman Elementary School in McLean, Virginia, April 26, 1954, were among the very first to receive the tests of the first polio vaccine. Oh. And sometime later, that was proven successful, and polio continued to be on the decline. And today, there's little pockets of it in, you know, some underdeveloped areas of the world. But by and large, it certainly was eradicated in the end of the 1960s and 70s and so forth, and was a terrible, terrible scourge in the early years of the 20th century, mid-20th century also. But
was that Dr. Sabin?
Albert Sabin and Jonas Salk, them working on the poliomyelitis vaccine there.
Isn't that something, how I remember that? It's a scary thing what's stuck up there in my noggin.
Yeah, it's very scary. But the students at the Franklin Sherman Elementary School, McLean, Virginia, were among the first to be given the either a vaccine, the real vaccine, or a placebo to see, you know, how it would work. But it was proven successful. A nice day in McLean, Virginia today, sunny and 55 right now, going up to about 67. Pretty much the same weather we're having.
We're going to talk to Dr. Silver in a minute for our Week in Health feature. I'm going to ask him.
Oh, I hope I got all the facts right on this.
Well, I'm sure you did, because you've never made a mistake.
Andy, is there any reason why he's being nice to me here for a change?
And you're so handsome. It's the rare combination of somebody who brings the, you know, the looks.
The brains.
The brains. Got the whole package going.
Wow.
I'm going to ask Dr. Silver what the status is of polio. I mean, is it?
Yes.
So we know.
Yeah.
If it's one more thing we should be worrying about. Returning.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, let's hope not. That's a good one.
Yeah, thank you. My aunt, my dad's older sister, contracted polio when she was 11 and for the rest of her life walked with braces and crutches.
Didn't FDR have polio?
Yes. Yeah. And was well hidden with the way in which, you know, he could be portrayed. You know, no TV at the time there. Right. You know, so if you saw him in newsreels, he was seated. Or just standing.
Or standing but not walking.
But not walking. Yeah. Yeah, because they didn't want him to show, they didn't want to show that he couldn't get around on his own, would display weakness. Exactly. Yeah.
Fascinating. See, this is why
there you go.
That's why people love the FFF, as we like to call it.
FFF.
When we're too busy to say the actual words. Dr. Jeremy Silver, the head of emergency medicine. Northwestern Kishwaukee Hospital. And Dr. Silver, good morning to you. Before we get to some actual topics here, I don't know if you heard Dave Schwann's far-flung forecast about the development of the polio vaccine. It was, you know, on this day, 1954. Is polio still a factor anywhere in the world right now?
Well, unfortunately, it is. You know, we... as you mentioned, the vaccine developed by Jonas Salk in 1954 and, you know, just been a huge, huge public health win for the world, really. Polio can lead to paralysis and death, and the vaccine's very safe. But unfortunately, there's a lot of areas in the world that don't have access to this, and so polio crops up in those regions, and it still is a problem.
You know? Wow, after all these years, isn't that amazing? You would think that humanitarian efforts would have gotten it to, you know, impoverished places that might not be as medically advanced. But I guess these kinds of things still pop up every once in a while, huh?
They do. And you allude to the humanitarian efforts. That's one of the benefits of outreach is helping to minimize the risk that these viruses spread. Because, of course, they can come back to us and bite us in the end. So that's a very important piece of it.
Yeah, which really kind of ties into what I think is the big medical story of the week, certainly for us here in Illinois, where the first measles, the first sighting of measles has taken place in the state of Illinois, something that we thought was gone, that we had eradicated, and now is making a comeback big time in some places, but now sneaking into Illinois as well.
Yeah, it's here. It's 30 jurisdictions, 29 states, and the city of New York have all reported measles activity, and that's the reporting. That's not necessarily everywhere that it is, of course. I'll remind your listeners, Dean, measles is the most contagious virus known to man. It's 10 times more contagious than Ebola. So just to put it into context, it's extremely easy to pass along. I'll also mention that in communities that are 95% immunized, it basically cannot spread. So that is the that's the barrier to these epidemics and these outbreaks. Rather, is immunization, and of course herd immunity does contribute to that as well. But yeah, it's a serious virus, and it can be lethal. As some folks know, three people this year have died out of roughly 1,000 people that have been infected. And it's just an awful disease. The other crazy thing about measles that I've just mentioned is the concept of immune amnesia. And amnesia is just a medical term for forgetting. The immune system, for one reason or another, we don't truly understand it, when it's attacked by measles, can lose its memory of other diseases that you've developed immunity to, whether you've been immunized or not. So let's say that you, before you got measles, you had strep throat. Well, measles can wipe out those, what they're called B cells or memory cells of the immune system that are, they're essentially warriors, that fight off the disease any other time that you see it after you first get it. Well, those warrior cells have a memory of it. They recognize it when they see it and they destroy it immediately, which is how your immune system functions so well. Well, measles wipes that out, and so you basically start again from ground zero with majorly reduced immunity. So it's one of the more nasty side effects of this virus that people don't really talk about as much.
Wow, I had never heard that before. And that could be complications of measles, I guess, right?
Correct. So it's the gift that keeps on giving in not a very nice way.
All right. Well, since we now know that it's been reported in Illinois, we should be more concerned about it. What should people be doing now? Going to their doctors and getting a booster shot? Obviously, if it's as contagious as you say, maybe washing your hands and wearing a mask isn't enough. If it's airborne, and it's going to find a way in regardless.
Certainly wearing a mask can help, and washing your hands I would definitely recommend always. It's a great, easy way to keep illness at bay. But I would just recommend keeping an eye open. The signs of measles, particularly in kids, are high fever and a rash. It starts at the top of the head and spreads to the feet. So those would be the two things that I would look for. And then the combination of cough, runny nose, and conjunctivitis. That triad of symptoms, along with a high fever, would definitely raise my suspicion. You can certainly, if you've been vaccine hesitant, nobody's judging, go ahead and talk to your doctor about maybe getting vaccinated. It's never too late, and it can always help. And if that's not on the cards, certainly masking up. And if your kids are sick, have a conversation with a pediatrician, or certainly bring them to us in the emergency room. We're happy to take a look.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and answer some of your calls and texts for Dr. Jeremy Silver, 312-981-7200. And let me see here. For some reason, our color screen, the colors on, there's a very dark purple color, which makes it impossible to see what is actually being written on here. I think it says Annette. Is that right?
Yeah.
Does it say Annette?
Yeah, it says Annette. Yeah.
It's like I get my bifocals checked or something. Hi, Annette. Welcome to You're On with Dr. Silver.
Oh, thank you so much. If I don't start my week with you, it's not a good week.
You are too kind. Thank you very, very much.
You're so welcome. Yeah, I heard that there's a certain years, I don't know, like 53 or 58 or something like that, where the shot wasn't that effective and you might need a booster. Is there something to that?
You're talking about a polio a booster, right?
Right, the polio, yeah.
Or you're talking the polio booster. I'm sorry, I was initially thinking the MMR booster. Let me do a little research on that.
Yeah.
Why don't we start with the MMR booster? First, explain what that is, Dr. Silver.
Sure. So the MMR vaccine is given twice, once at about a year to 18 months, and then another around 5 years old. And there was a time in the 50s and 60s where that didn't occur, and so it's recommended that folks that were born in that era or were of childhood age in that era just have a talk with their physician about where they're at. Not everybody needs it, and I don't know the exact years, and there may be other factors that I'm not aware of, but what I tell people is, if you were born in the 50s and 60s and you're concerned about your immune status, go see your doctor. And what they might do is they might draw something called a titer, which essentially is a measurement of how many immune cells you have against a certain a pathogen like measles. And in this case, MMR just stands for measles, mumps, and rubella. It's a three-virus vaccine given together. So that would be my recommendation on that. In terms of the polio, I'm not certain about time frame. Polio is a little bit more complex, and I would refer you to a primary care doctor for more information on that, so I don't speak out of turn.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I heard something last week, and I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah. We have so many people on the line. Annette, thank you for the call. So many people on the line with questions about this. One is, I was born in 65. My wife was born in 67. Do we need a shot for measles? That would fall out of the range that you were talking about of 50s and 60s, I think, right?
Yeah, without knowing the exact dates and times, it becomes a little bit trickier to give recommendations. So I don't want to misspeak. Yeah.
Okay.
But I would just say if you're born in the 50s and 60s, talk to your doctor.
Check with your doctor.
That makes it a safe recommendation.
847 has, I think, an interesting question. What's the difference between measles and German measles? I've always wondered that myself.
Yeah. So measles, The technical name for measles is rubeola, and German measles is rubella. Now, German measles or rubella is, again, they're different viruses, and they can both cause problems. But German measles or rubella is more dangerous during pregnancy. It can spread to the baby and cause very, very serious lifetime complications and death. So we worry more about the infant and the pregnant mother with German measles or rubella. And then measles, of course, we've talked about extensively.
And the 847 area code, I'm a 73-year-old who had measles as a child. Do I still have immunity or do I need a vaccine?
Yeah, great question. That's, you know, the fact that that you're 73 and that you had measles, likely you've still got great immunity to it. There may be some benefit from a booster. And the only reason I say that is, I wouldn't have said that 5 years ago, okay? 5 years ago or 10 years ago, before these recent spate of outbreaks, when we had mass immunity, probably not worth the time and the very, very tiny risks that are associated with any vaccine, okay? And now, because it's so widespread and the immune system is aging, I also don't know that individual's health status, what other medical conditions they may have. Certainly something worth at least talking to the doctor about and saying, would it make sense?
Yeah, that's why it's so important to, I mean, we're happy to try to answer your questions as best we can in a general sense here on the air, but without knowing, you know, very definite specifics about your case, it's impossible for Dr. Silver to make specific recommendations on things. That's why, you know, we say check with your doctor, you know, check with your physician, because hopefully he or she would have a greater knowledge of your health history, because that makes a big difference, doesn't it?
A huge difference. You know, healthcare, you know, as much information as is available online and as many cases as I've seen, I can certainly give general advice. But at the end of the day, it really is a very personal business. And every interaction that we have as members of the healthcare community, doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, et cetera, it's very much tailored to that one interaction. And the advice given to one person may be different than we give to another.
Yeah. The news this week about the death of Steve McMichael, we talked about ALS on several occasions over the years. But it's a neuromuscular disease, isn't it? And the system just, you know, slowly breaks down. It takes away your control of your muscular system, which basically controls everything in the body, right?
Terrible disease. It's a progressive disease, meaning once it starts, it doesn't stop, and it just basically destroys the nerve cells in the brain and spinal cord. And like you say, it leads to weakness and paralysis and eventually, unfortunately, death. There are sort of versions of the disease. So there's kind of a longer lived version of the disease where you can kind of, your life is, you know, extended as long as you're able to keep some of those problems that occur with ALS at bay. Stephen Hawking being a primary example, the brilliant physicist who lived in a wheelchair for years. But that's really the exception, not the rule. Most people are gone in a very short period of time.
Dr. Jeremy Silver is the medical director of emergency medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital, and I hope you have a great week, Doc. Thanks so much.
Hey, Dean, thank you. Have a good one.
Many, many, many very nice texts. 773. What's our number again? 773-279-9817.
981, yeah.
Wait, is it 773?
312.
312.
9817.
So many numbers in our head.
I've only mentioned it 9 million times.
Well, that's great.
Let's see here. 773 area code. Good morning, Dean. You start my Sunday with sunshine and joy.
Oh.
Oh, we've got the weather to go along with it, too.
Yeah. Maybe we should rename the show the Sunshine and Joy Show.
How about sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows? You don't like that?
Apparently not.
Okay. I thought I'd throw it out.
It's an old Leslie Gore song that he's talking about. I know you're shocked to see he's referring to something obscure from the 1960s. Here, you'll like this one. 224 area code. Good Sunday morning, Dean. Listening to you on an old transistor radio this morning.
Love it.
Isn't that great?
Love it.
That's cool.
Schwani brought an antique electronic device.
I couldn't help it.
To the station today.
I knew you'd get a charge out of it.
It's our new feature, Schwani Show and Tell. Show and tell, show and tell.
Well, I brought in records for Jack a couple weeks ago on his last day here.
Actual vinyl 45 RPM records.
45 and an original Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album.
What's a vinyl record, Uncle Dean? And tell what you brought today.
Today I brought in, I guess I should hold it up like we used to do. It's over on
it's over on your desk there. Okay.
You know we're on radio also.
I know we are, yeah, but this is a Walkman. It plays cassettes.
What's a cassette, Uncle D?
It didn't record any. The one I have there was just a player.
And I love it, though, because it's about the size of like a pack of cigarettes.
A little bigger than that. Yeah, yeah.
But you open the lid up, you put your cassette in,
mm-hmm.
and hey, good luck, and I'll be back to pick you up later.
But you can fast forward the tape. You can rewind the tape.
Then you can open it and flip over the tape.
Yeah. Flip it over, yes. Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's cool.
The AA batteries, however, are long dead. I'll have to change them. And next week, I'll bring in a real cassette to play it.
Ooh.
How about that?
Oh, that's exciting.
You didn't bring in the headphones, though, that I love so much. They're very, very thin thing that fit over your head, and the little tiny foam pads that just barely covered your ears.
Yep. So really, everybody got to enjoy
everybody heard everything.
That you were playing.
Right. I have to find those. I may have a pair of those somewhere, but could be in the box with all the old patch cords that I had.
Good heavens.
Maybe I should bring those in. How about it, Dean?
That's our new feature, Schwanee Show and Tell.
Okay. All right.
Patch cords.
I can hardly wait.
Would you prefer the ones with the quarter-inch phono plugs or the the RCA?
I have no
quarter-inch.
I have no preference for you. I have an idea of where I'd like to see you plug it in, but that's a whole nother thing. In just a few minutes, Schwanee.
Yes,
Mr. Joey DiOrio is going to be joining us.
Oh, wonderful!
The actor formerly known as Bozo.
You almost got all choked up there.
I did. I'm a very emotional person. as you know, so we'll talk to Joey coming up in just a minute. Can I just say how moving it was, all the funeral coverage of Pope Francis? I watched a lot of it. I watched a lot more than I thought I was going to watch, but because I was really very taken in by the expressions of the celebration of his life and the kind of man that he was, the kind of legacy that he leaves. It was very, very moving to watch the whole thing. And I caught an awful lot of the coverage throughout the week. But I woke up early. I always wake up early anyway. But I turned the TV on and I watched most of the funeral coverage yesterday morning. Were you also...
Extra early? Did you get up?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, certainly. It's a very emotional time. When I first heard the news that the Pope had passed away, it was kind of rather ironic because we featured an interview with Cardinal Supich that Dave Plyer did, and the Pope, or rather Cardinal Supich, saying, the Pope's doing better, but I hope he pays attention to, what his doctors are saying. Yeah. And then he passes away our time, around 11:30 last Sunday night. Rome is 7 hours ahead of us, so it was about 7 in the morning.
Yeah, I think that's also, what was sort of fascinating by the whole thing is that just the day before, he was greeting people for Easter. He drove around in the Pope Mobile, greeting people and blessing people and so forth. And then just a few hours later, he passed away. It was just the whole thing. But his selflessness and his leading the way that he led his life and the Catholic Church completely in service of others was very inspiring in these days of where it seems like, we live in such a me-first sort of world these days, that he cared about people who were in poverty, cared about people who, were being ignored by everyone else. And, Catholic or not, I'm not Catholic. He was a very admirable person. And, we need more people like him in the world.
We had a story this morning also from a bishop in Hawaii saying that he felt that a lot of people within the Catholic Church would want his successor to be much like him, to carry on the legacy of what he did.
I've heard arguments on both sides of that, where some people feel like the church should go back to being more conservative again. But I think that he brought, like people who had fallen away from their Catholicism or, of attending church every week, that he kind of brought them back by his actions. So, and what is it that, the number of cardinals now who will decide who will be the next pope were largely chosen by him.
Many of them were.
So, who knows what's going to happen. Anyway, just wanted to say that.
I'm thinking that Pope Francis elevated Cardinal Supich when he was an archbishop, when he came here to succeed Cardinal George.
Yeah.
And then elevated him to cardinal. I think it was Francis that did that.
I don't remember, but yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. Wouldn't be surprised. 847 area code says, Dean, at church this morning, I heard that the Pope was buried in a pair of scuffed black loafers instead of the red shoes that the Pope normally wears. Wouldn't surprise me. I saw, you know, one of the many pieces that reporters were doing is how the Pope liked to just, you know, he walked around wearing sort of everyday, you know, black scuffed up work shoes instead of the red velvet shoes that popes traditionally walked in. It was the kind of man that he was, right?
Yeah.
I think that was, yeah, you know, it's part of why people were so, you know, could relate to him so much, that he, why they called him the people's pope and so forth, is, you know, he could have easily, he could have lived at the Vatican, right? He chose not to live in the palatial palace there, but to live in a rather modest apartment.
Also, he specified for his funeral that when, you know, the casket would be displayed there in the St. Peter's Basilica, and also, you know, the square, that it would be low, it wouldn't be elevated. It would be, you know, you know, kind of a little bit off the ground, but not high up on a pedestal.
Not like the way that it's been in the past.
That some have been in the past, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, may, as they say, may his memory be eternal. And his impact on caring for others, I hope that's super contagious. You know, that's a remarkable thing to be able to care about other people like that. We could use a lot more of that. That's all I have to say. I have no smart aleck remarks to go.
I would hope not after talking about this.
Although I like to point out, I am also wearing scuffed black.
You're wearing a sweater today, by the way.
Don't I look nice today?
You look dapper today.
Yeah, thank you.
You look dapper. Did anybody write in saying you were handsome?
Nope, not a one.
What's the number again here?
In fact, a couple of people said, so you didn't get any sleep last night? Bozo Circus on WGN-TV, arguably one of the most successful children's shows in the history of the medium. For 17 years of the long run of Bozo on WGN, the man behind the red nose and big red wig was one Mr. Joey DeOria, who now is pursuing other interests since the show went off the air. He's doing many, many other things, but he's going to be back in Chicago next weekend. It's a pleasure to welcome back my longtime pal, Mr. Joey DeOria. Hello there, my friend.
Hello, Dean. Thanks for having me on.
Nice to have you with us. Now, where would we find you this morning? In what part of the country are you?
I am in the wilds of Idaho, knee-deep in potatoes.
Knee-deep in potatoes. Well, you did always know how to have a good time. I will give you that much.
Well, I tell you, yeah, it's been very exciting. You know, when Larry Harmon was the owner of the Bozo franchise, I was not permitted to go out and do Comic-Cons and various events. But since the character has been taken over by David Arquette, he has been very generous in allowing me to travel around the country. And I've been doing a number of Comic-Cons throughout the country.
Yeah, and you're
I'm coming back to Chicago next weekend.
Yeah, what's it called? The Nightmare Weekend, something like that?
It's called the Nightmare Weekend, and it's sponsored by GalaxyCon, and it's going to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont.
Beautiful Rosemont. That'll be fun, yeah. And I know you've done these before, and people, you know, they just want to share their memories, don't they, of growing up watching Bozo.
I've had so many people who have come in. I was in Texas a few months ago in Houston, and I actually had several people come up to me, and one of them was an at-home player. And
oh no!
He said he still had the bicycle, so that was amazing.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. This is going to be May 2nd through 4th at the Donald D. Stevens Convention Center. I was looking at the lineup. People like William Shatner will be there. And
yes.
Like other big names, you know, people that we grew up with. So it's going to be a lot of fun to go and check this out.
Yes, indeed. Actually, I met Mr. Shatner, my goodness, about 20 years ago in London. I was head writer on Star Trek The Experience, and I was charged with finding him a place where he could get a good steak.
Oh, that's funny. And was he impressed that Bozo was working with him?
It didn't come up.
So what do you
do? It was all about Star Trek and all about him.
Well, that, you know, there's a place for everyone and everything at these kind of weekends going on. He's just one of there are many nostalgic names that'll be out there for this. So tell everybody what it is that you do now.
Well, now, basically, when I'm not doing the various Comic Cons, I'm still doing voiceover work. I was the voice of Whisper, the Yo-Kai Butler in Yo-Kai Watch, Butch the Alley Cat, and Droopy on the Tom and Jerry series, which ran about 15 years ago. And I've been doing video game voices. I was Alistair Azmuth in Ratchet and Clank Future, A Crack in Time.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people who have come to see me at some of these events are big fans of a lot of the voiceover work that I've done. So that's kind of gratifying, too.
Yeah, and what brought you to Idaho? I know you were in Southern California for quite a while where you're doing a lot of this voiceover work, but now a lot of this voiceover work can be done anywhere. You know, if you have a good quality microphone, you can do it anywhere. You don't need to be in Los Angeles for that anymore.
That's true. It was during the pandemic, my son and his family started traveling around trying to find a new place to live, and they settled on Idaho. And, you've met my wife, Jenny Dean.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing she said to me was, "That's too far to go and visit. We're moving to Idaho."
Yeah, you want to be near the grandkids, of course.
Exactly. And so when I realized that I could do a lot of voiceover work from home, in fact, I did quite a bit. When they first moved to Idaho, I built a small studio in their garage, and I did several jobs from there. So I figured, you know what, it's just as well. And here's the interesting part, Dean. The little house that we were living in Altadena, California, recently burnt to the ground.
Oh, my gosh. No kidding.
Yeah. It was amazing. We lived in a lovely little neighborhood in Altadena, California, beautiful little area in the foothills. And that was completely taken by the
wildfires.
The fire.
Wow.
Now, we have many friends who lost everything. Yeah. And it's we count ourselves lucky to have left when we did.
That you were able to get out of there, yeah. Well, we look forward to seeing you in the Chicago area. It's going to be, you'll be there all weekend, May 2nd through 4th. Nightmare mm-hmm. Weekend, Chicago is what it's called, at the Donald D. Stevens Convention Center. And if you have questions, you can go to galaxycon.com to see so many nostalgic stars, including our pal Joey DeAuria. It's nice to talk to you. We look forward to seeing you soon, buddy. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dean.
Everybody is in such a good mood this morning.
It's the warmer weather. It's the lighter days. The sunshine.
I think it's the sunshine.
The sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows.
All right, we're going to have to play that song.
I know, I was going to.
Later, because
no one knows what it is.
The look on Andy's face every time you bring that up.
I've heard it before.
The song?
Yeah.
Or you just have heard him say obscure things before?
Yeah. Well, that too.
I'm thinking of more items to bring in for show and tell next week.
By the way, I put the picture of Schwani and his Walkman on my Facebook page and
thanks
other
a lot.
Socials.
Thank you.
Is it going nuts? People.
You can see. I think I tagged you in it, so you can check it out.
Can't wait. You know, we're talking. We have so many nice people, like texts of people and really enjoying the show. That's so nice when somebody takes a minute to say, can't start my Sunday without you, you know, that kind of thing. It's a very, very nice.
You know, I do look forward to the first 30 minutes of our show every week because I never know
totally
what
unpredictable
might happen.
Going to happen?
We'll start in one spot, and then we'll end up talking about ice cubes versus shards, and then we'll come back and talk Green River, and then we'll talk about tape editing, and We Are the World, and it just fits.
Somehow it all works.
Yeah.
Despite the rehearsal,
but you know what? Works. You know what? Can I rewind a little bit?
Yeah,
we were talking about enjoying the Green River beverage with shards of ice or crushed ice,
right,
as opposed to ice cubes. And you know why one is more delicious than another? Leave it to one of our listeners to offer an explanation.
Okay,
the 219 area code: shards of ice offer more surface area to chill the liquid than cubes. It makes the liquid much colder, or at least appear to be much colder. That makes sense to me.
Makes sense to me, too.
I like that. But, thank you for all the nice things. And somebody earlier texted in and said that to them, this show is sunshine and joy. And I said we should rename the show Sunshine and Joy because that's what we bring every week. it's not that funny.
Well, considering
sunshine and joy sounds like something you should wash your dishes with, doesn't
yes
it?
Yes, good call.
But somebody texted in just a few minutes after that.
Dishwashing liquid.
Don't name it sunshine and joy. Keep it salty and cranky. I'm salty.
I like that.
He's cranky. We're salty. We're cranky. And now at 10:40, time for the Weekend Theater. What's going on stage in Chicago? And, they've got big doings going on out at the Drury Lane in Oakbrook Terrace. They have just opened up a new adaptation of the best-selling novel and Tom Hanks movie that followed it, The Da Vinci Code. I'm so curious. I haven't seen this yet. I'm looking forward to seeing it. It's playing through June 1st, so we've got a little bit of time on this. But it was such a compelling book and a very compelling motion picture. I'm so curious to hear about how they are adapting this now for the live stage. Joining us on the phone line to talk about it are the two leads in the show, Chicago Theater veteran Jeff Parker, who plays the leading role of Professor Robert Langdon. That's the role that Tom Hanks played in the movie. And Vanna Asadorian, who plays the French police officer Sophie Neveu. Jeff and Vanna, welcome to the show. Very nice to have you both.
Well, thanks a lot, Dean. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
Happy to be here.
Vanna, is that right? Vanna, is that the correct way to say?
Vanna.
Vanna. Okay, Vanna. Very yes. good. So, Vanna, why don't you start off and kind of explain, you know, how the basic storyline of this, of what people will see when they come to see this adaptation of The Da Vinci Code.
Yeah. We're going to try to be as cryptic as we can to not give away secrets of the show.
Right.
But
I'm curious to see how you're going to do that.
Yeah, me too. So here we go. So this is essentially a mystery that follows the emotional journey of Sophie Neveu, who's a French cryptographer who gets called in one day at work to come in for a crime that's been committed that has a lot of cryptic messages that she needs to help uncover. And that's where she meets Robert Langdon, who's a symbologist who who's come to Paris to give a lecture and gets pulled into this investigation as well. And so the two characters meet each other and go on this very fast-paced, very short journey of uncovering certain secrets and decoding messages that eventually lead to some, you know, pretty big revelations for Sophie's character and discoveries about her past and her family. And some major secrets are revealed throughout the process, and we get to see these two characters get to know each other a little bit better and uncover this mystery.
Yeah. Very a great job, by the way, describing without giving away too much. Very
well done. Yes. Very well done.
Very, very skillfully done. Jeff, from your part, from the perspective of Professor Langdon, talk to me a little bit about, you know, the basics of this plot line and
how. Well, he reminds me of one of those characters caught up in a Hitchcock thriller, sort of wrong place at the wrong time, and yet he is brought there for his expertise by the French police to investigate this an incident at the Louvre in Paris. And because he's a symbologist, he's able to interpret all manner of symbols in throughout history, symbols that occur in paintings by the old masters, and that figures very much in our story. Obviously, the title, The Da Vinci Code, indicates that. So Langdon finds himself in this situation where he meets Sophie, and they go on this roller coaster ride of an adventure where they uncover just some amazing possibilities that the audience then has to grapple with throughout the 2.5 hours that they're with us each night.
Yeah, Vanay, because this is such a well-known book and movie, does that play into this as well? You know, that you have people who are familiar with the story, who, you know, maybe two or three steps ahead of you before what's going on stage?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, I personally read the book, and so that informed, you know, what I was bringing into the piece. There's certain differences that, you know, the adapters took artistic liberties to adapt the piece to be palatable for a theater going audience, but I do think that there is a level of fandom with the show that makes us, at least for me, I was like, I have to be responsible for telling the story the way that it is, you know, because it is such a well-received and popular story. There comes a little bit of responsibility nerves that come with it, but I think for the most part, the audiences have been receiving it for what it is, and rather than, you know, what we know it to be. I would say that it's, you know, they're coming to the theater with an open mind to see the piece as a theatrical experience rather than, you know, an adaptation of the movie or the book. But of course, we do have people that are very specific about what they, you know, expect to see, and you know, I hope that they're open about experiencing it theatrically and live.
Yeah, Jeff, that must be kind of interesting, of walking that line of being true to the source material, but, you know, telling the story as you need to tell the story, adapted for the stage, that particular theater. You know, there are a lot of factors that go into the adaptation.
There are, and, you know, when you take a novel like Dan Brown's novel, and then you assign it to a couple of a co-adapter team, as we have in this case. And Dan Brown has been very involved with the adapters in terms of deciding how to theatricalize the play. So it has been a real collaboration. In fact, on this production, we got a new script. So the published script that you could, you know, probably go and buy on Amazon is not necessarily the script that we are using, because there was additional material added that we got to play with and figure out. And so it's still very much a work in progress for the adapters of it. And that's a great part of the fun for us as actors in rehearsal, is to sort of suss that out, and because they're keying off our feedback as we try to bring these characters to life. And eventually, you know, the thing that happens with a novel sometimes is that a character or two that you may know from the novel may not make it into a stage adaptation, and that has happened here. But it's all in service to delivering a tight narrative when you come see the play.
I love that. You know, that this is being presented at Drury Lane. I was trying to think of the last time, if ever, I saw a straight drama at the Drury Lane, you know, kind of famous for their musicals that they put on. I can't even think if I've ever seen a straight drama.
Recently, not too long ago, they did a very well-received production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. They just did The Audience, where Janet Ulrich Brooks, who I'm sure you've seen, Dean, played Queen Elizabeth. So they have been venturing more in the direction of doing, I would say, maybe a play a season, and try to as a way of expanding what they offer to their audience. So I think it's great.
I do too. I love the variety that it brings. Let me take a break, and we'll come back and talk more with Vanay Asadourian and Jeff Parker, the leads in The Da Vinci Code at the Drury Lane Theater in Oak Brook Terrace, playing through June the 1st. And Vanay, this is your first time, I understand, at the Drury Lane in Oak Brook, is it not?
It sure is, yeah. It's my first time. I'm fairly recent to, or new to, the Chicago world. I moved here just last year, so I'm just discovering Chicago and loving it.
Very nice. So how does it feel to an outsider to come in and immerse yourself in what I think is one of the greatest theater communities in the world?
I mean, it's been a whirlwind. We started, it was a quick process, a very intense rehearsal process with a very tech-heavy production. We have, a lot of design elements that go into the piece, the projections and lighting and live, orchestration of the piece. So I think I was just so focused on making sure I can get the words out of my mouth and do the job that it's been very exciting to be there.
Yeah,
it's been a little busy, but we're figuring the show out. I think at every performance we're learning new things, and we're also uncovering, I think, I'm hearing things for the first time every night, because there's so much information that's shared and so many clues that are being discussed and uncovered. So it's been fun to keep going with it.
Well, fortunately you've got Jeff by your side, who has I would say just a little experience in the Chicago theater scene, right, Jeff?
Yeah, a couple of shows here and there.
the list of Jeff's credits of shows that he's been in, it's like, some of the best shows that I've covered over the years. Not your first time at Drury Lane, but what do you have to say, Jeff, about the Chicago theater scene? I mean, clearly it works for you, and you are getting something back from it as a performer.
I sure am, and there was no reason to expect, growing up in Los Angeles, in and around Hollywood as I did, that I would end up spending 35 years as a professional actor in Chicago. But my parents had the wisdom to, because they'd heard through a family friend, to send me to a summer program way back in the 80s up at Northwestern called the Chero Program. And it was in that program that we came down into the city and saw a show at Steppenwolf at their old space on Halsted, the old St. Nicholas Theater.
Wow.
And it was Fool for Love with Billy Peterson and Rondi Reed. And that planted the seed. I still ended up going to school in L.A. at USC, fight on, USC Trojans. And Vanay went to UCLA, so that was a little bit of a dig for at the UCLA.
A little bit of a dig.
But then,
go
Bruins. Yes. And so I ended up in Chicago after college because there was something about the theater community here that seemed so exciting and so unlike anything that I'd experienced in and around the theater in L.A. And it's 35 years later. And incidentally, I made my professional debut at Drury Lane in a show called On the 20th Century way back in 1990. Yeah.
Wow. I remember seeing that. That's amazing. Well, I mean, amazing credits like Mamma Mia and Young Frankenstein and Fiddler and Lord of the Rings, a musical tale. The list goes on and on. And all of this experience from both Vonnegut and Jeff, all coming to the stage for Da Vinci Code, which is at the Drury Lane Theater and Oakbrook Terrace now through June 1st. You can get tickets and information at Drury Lane Theater. com. I appreciate both of you joining us today. I look forward to seeing you both soon. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Dean. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
We were talking about this a little bit earlier. I completely enjoyed Andy and Hamp and OB yesterday with your draft special.
Oh, thank you.
That you did, your NFL special. And, you know, coming from me, who knows nothing about any of that, I just completely thoroughly enjoy the show.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I love working with those guys. It's because I can bring up a topic and I know that it's going to get covered, and it's going to get covered so that everybody understands what we're trying to talk about. I mean, from the hardcore Bears fan to the casual Bears fan
to the stupid guy like me.
Well, just to, you know, it's teaching and learning and everything like that too,
but it's the theater of it all.
Yeah, and
also,
and those guys, they have such a respect for each other, and I tell people how, you know, reverent Hamp is towards OB because he realizes it, that without OB and without the way that he played the game and those in his generation, there wouldn't be another generation to improve upon the National Football League they did when Hamp's era. And he's still, both of those guys, I mean, they haven't played in decades.
I love it.
But they still love the team so much and have a passion for it that good, bad, or indifferent, I mean, it's you're getting honesty.
OB got riled up. I didn't know what he was going to get riled up about because there was no Bears, you know, defeat to commiserate him.
You know, it's almost like PTSD when we talk about last year and the year before. I mean, it's like, you know, duck and cover. Because
Danny.
You mentioned the name Eberflus and it sends shockwaves through people. You know, it's just like, you don't know how to react.
Shawnee, give me a little of your OB point, too.
We had good results from the draft. Now it's time to get to work. This is their last chance.
We are
at a critical moment in the history of the National Football League.
It's pretty good.
He's going to come in here one week and pound your head and
wash you like a bug. Yeah.
I love it.
It's so much fun, though. And it's more fun now because these guys are looking at what Ben Johnson, the new head coach, is trying to do and bring
in here.
They're
enthusiastic. Yeah.
Yeah, they're very upbeat. We were a little upbeat last year, I have to admit, too, but we were all kind of cautious because that E-name was still the head coach of the Bears.
E-name.
I don't want to set people off. But, you know, you kind of look at where they are right now, and then you're dumbfounded when you look back thinking, how did they let that happen? So now we're hopefully good. I mean, I don't know what really to expect the first year under a new head coach, but I like the things he's saying, and he's backing things up, too, with actions.
I love it.
Yeah.
Shawnee, what were you most excited about with the NFL draft this
year? Oh, I thought it was fine. Undoubtedly.
Yeah, it was cool, though. It was cool for Bears fans to watch the draft this year, knowing that they didn't have to reach for a pick because they needed a certain position, because a bunch of tackles, they were talking about drafting a tackle, and a bunch of the good ones really, they went right before the Bears picked. And rather than having to reach for maybe the sixth or seventh best tackle, they got the second or the first best tight end. But the way you look at it, they didn't have to reach, and it was really nice to be in that position.
Here's what I'm going to throw in when I want to sound like I know what I'm talking about, when really I have no idea what I'm talking about with any of the What's the deal with Deion Sanders' kid being picked so late in the game?
See, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Very good.
144th pick.
Very good. Then please don't ask me a follow-up question to that, because that's all I know.
Yeah. Shedeur Sanders, it was bad theater to kind of have to watch this kid kind of suffer through every pick. And I don't know what the deal was. I mean, there were some teams that were shying away from him because he didn't present well in some of their interviews. No. He didn't throw at the combine. I mean, it was one of those kind of things where once you get skipped over, it seemed like it was nobody wanted to touch him. And then the Browns pick him, and they already have three quarterbacks under contract.
Yeah. Juwanie ever throw at the combine?
He threw rocks at combines as they were going through the fields. That's what he was doing.
No, no.
Longtime listeners of this show will remember one of our most memorable moments on the show was the morning that Drew Carey, the actor, TV host, Drew Carey surprised us with a phone call. Believe it or not, I was shocked when I learned this. That was 25 years ago. That happened.
Wow.
It was the first week of May, the year 2000. We were getting ready to start the show. We had, I don't know, half a dozen guests, you know, booked on the show. And within the hour preceding when the show was starting, every single guest on the show canceled, got sick, couldn't make it. One reason or another, suddenly everybody canceled. And, you know, so we're like, well, you know, we'll just wing it today. That's all right. We've done shows like this before. So we went on the air kind of joking around. Oh, all of our guests canceled. What are we going to do? Are there any celebrities listening? And people, you know, listeners started calling up, imitating their favorite celebrities on the phone. And we had some fun. And in my ear, my producer at the time, Scott Cameron, tells me Drew Carey is on line 6. And I thought he meant somebody impersonating Drew Carey was on line 6. But the real Drew Carey happened to be listening through a closed circuit feed that we used to have set up with Walt Disney World. We were the Walt Disney World station at the time. And in the hotel rooms throughout Walt Disney World, there was a channel where you could listen to WGN radio, and the real Drew Carey was listening, and I made him wait on hold for about 20 minutes while I took other callers who, you know, were doing impersonations and such. And then finally, this is 25 years ago, finally, I go to line 6, and this is what I heard.
And let's see, this is Drew, it says, on line 1?
Hi, Dean, it's Drew Carey.
Get out of here.
I swear to God, I can't believe they kept me on hold for so long when you're looking for a guest. I'm in Disney World.
This is really Drew Carey.
Yeah, it's really Drew Carey.
Get out of here.
I'm in Disney World.
Why I kept you on hold so long? Because I thought you were somebody goofing on us.
No, I'm at Disney World. I'm watching it on. I'm watching your show on TV. I guess you're owned by Disney.
Well, no, actually, we're not owned by Disney.
No, you know how in hotel rooms they have radio stations?
Yeah.
WGN.
At the
WCBS is on another station.
Yeah, at the Disney resorts. We're on the television system there.
Yeah.
And you're watching
the
WGN channel, and you have us turned on, and you heard about our dilemma.
Yeah, I had you on while I was packing, and I heard you had your guest canceled, and I thought, well, I got nothing to do.
when I said if there are any celebrities listening,
I was already on hold when he said that.
Yeah, it said Drew on the phone line. I thought, well, you know, somebody's goofing around saying that they're Drew Carey. Someone's going to call up and do a bad Drew Carey impersonation.
Oh, no. No, it's me.
Holy smokes. This is very cool.
See, so I'm going to make up for all the celebrities.
I love your show.
Thank you. Well, yeah, especially now.
You
saved your ass.
You did. Well, there's that. Drew Carey show is seen in syndication on our sister station, WGN Television.
Oh, no kidding.
Here in Chicago.
Oh, that's good.
It's on every night at 6:30. I watch it all the time. I've come to a couple of tapings of your show. That's how much I like
your
show.
Oh, have you? No kidding.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh, thanks.
And you are, you're just like one of the hottest guys on ABC right now.
I was on during sweeps, the one couple of sweeps ago when I was on Geppetto and everything. I was on 6 hours of prime time.
Yeah. I mean, you're one of the...
I was wondering if that was a record.
Besides Regis, I think you are probably the most seen person on ABC, right?
Might be. Pete Regis because he's only on for 3 hours. I was on Two Millionaires. He's on 4 Millionaires that week, but I was on Two Millionaires plus an hour of Drew Carey because he had 1.5 hours of repeat, an hour of Who's Line, which is the funniest show on TV.
It is absolutely hilarious. Tell me how, I mean, I know that's a show that started in England.
Oh, yeah, it's a radio show in England.
Right, but you just were a fan of that show and decided to adapt it and bring it to American TV?
Well, you know what, I never watched it till Ryan Stiles got, he's on Who's Line, he plays Lewis on the Drew Carey Show. Right. So Ryan Stiles got cast on the Drew Carey Show. Then he said, oh, I do the show Who's Line. I go, I heard about it on cable. And I never really watched it, and I watched it because he was on it. It's really funny. I don't know if you've never seen it, you have to watch it.
I watch it all the time. I watch it all the time. You know what? I'm not blowing smoke, up your butt saying this to you. The American version, I think, is 100 times funnier. I don't know if it's...
The British producers think that the American version is better.
I think it's much funnier, and I don't know if it's the people that you have, Ryan Stiles, and the other comedians, the improvisational comedians whose names escape me, but the regular cast that you have on there are so hilarious.
Yeah, Ryan Stiles, Colin Mochrie, is the again Wayne Brady are always on the show. Wayne Brady does a lot of the music stuff, and then we rotate the fourth seat all the time. But those guys, those guys are so funny, and everybody says they like my show, and all I do is tell them what to do. I just read the stupid cards.
Yeah, but I think you have that. You're sort of the straight man for all of the madness that's going on.
Yeah, kind of. But that's and that's all the funny stuff.
Yeah, well, it's essential though. You're feeding everybody just the right thing. How much preparation is there? Absolutely no planning for the improvisational community.
Oh yeah, it's all made up. Well,
they have no idea what's going to happen before.
The performers don't, but it's really one of the most planned shows because everything that I read off the cards is planned ahead of time. And like we'll play games like a dating game where they, try to guess. They give each guy a character to play. And so they'll pretend they're on a dating game, and they'll give each bachelor a character to play, and they have to try to guess who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to make the characters something that the performer will do well, and characters that will interact with each other and stuff like that. So that kind of stuff is well thought out, even though the performers don't know what they're going to do. None of the performers ever know what they're going to do.
That's amazing.
But that kind of stuff we try to plan out ahead of time. And then when, if I'm going to do a hoedown, let's say, and I ask for a hoedown suggestion from the audience, they yell out all kinds of different stuff, and I try to pick out something that we can use the best. So it's not like we're trying to kill ourselves up there. We're trying to get, we're trying to be as funny as we can be.
May 21st, 2000. How nice a guy is that? Drew Carey is packing, getting ready to go to leave Disneyland, Disney World. He was in Florida, where we used to be piped into their audio systems there on their closed circuit TV system. He hears my dilemma. He calls up. I literally kept him on hold. Had to be 15, 20 minutes because I completely thought somebody's calling up and goofing around and we'll just take them in order. And my producer in my ear, my producer Scott Cameron at the time, was in my ear telling me Drew Carey is on line 5. And I'm telling him back on the intercom, there's no way Drew Carey is calling in on a Sunday morning to WGN in Chicago. It's really Drew Carey. And I didn't believe him. And so I just took my sweet time and finally got around him. And look what a nice guy. He sat through my goofing around with people and gave me just the nicest interview there could possibly be.
Yeah, there you go. 25 years ago. It was the first week of May of the year 2000. Drew Carey calling in on the old Sunday morning show. Our pal Donnie Wahlberg, who we've gotten to know through the years, part of it, I guess, is because of his marriage to actress Jenny McCarthy, good old, from the south side of Chicago. When they got married, they set up a residence right here in the Chicago area. They live out in St. Charles. They have one of their Wahlburgers restaurants is out in that area. Their kids are, growing up in this area. And we've had the distinct pleasure of getting to know them through the years, having many conversations, visiting with them. And that was the case this past week where we did a nice little Zoom chat with our pal Donnie Wahlberg about New Kids on the Block Day, which was this past Thursday, declared such by the then governor of Massachusetts, their hometown, Michael Dukakis, one-time presidential candidate as well. But they've got, you know, Las Vegas residencies and all kinds of things going on in the world of not only New Kids on the Block, but for Donnie, who has been starring on the TV show Blue Bloods, news about a spinoff, all part of the conversation that we had with the great Donnie Wahlberg.
Every once in a while, I see something pop up on social media or someplace, you know, the secret to your marriage, you know, how you guys keep things fresh and alive. What's your answer to that? Like, what keeps the magic going in your marriage, in your opinion?
Well, everything really contributes to it, right? It's hard to say there's one thing. We have a lot of different things we do, from renewing our vows, which, you know, I understand there are a lot of people who don't get that. You know, it's, you know, some people will say, well, we did it and we don't need to renew our vows. They meant that much to us the first time, and they meant that much to us too the first time. It's just, you know, it's something I planned to do the first year sort of as a surprise. And because, you know, because it is hard on your wedding day to be as present as possible. There's a lot of chaos and guests and, you know, and so much going on. We were filming a TV show as well. So for us, I thought it was important to renew our vows year one. And it was such an emotional experience to do it that we did it a second year. And now we've done it all the way up to 10.
That's awesome.
And it's one of our little traditions that I think every year sets us off on a great note, starting the new year, the new wedding year together, the new marriage year together. But I think, you know, most important is finding a communication method that works. You know, we do a lot of things to keep the romance hot, and we do all these different things, but everybody has a different way of experiencing their marriage, right? And I think if there's one universal thing that I think can work for everybody, it's find a way to communicate that takes the fight out of uncomfortable conversations, right? So if you can do that, if you can have the difficult conversations in a way that sometimes we are going to say something that, you know, we may not think it's that bad of a thing to say. We think it's going to be met with open arms and an open heart and an open mind, but sometimes it isn't. And sometimes it's, we don't think we're saying it that it has any uncomfortable tone to it or any uncomfortable meaning to it, but it may bump into someone, you know, because of their past life experience.
Sure.
And right. So we as couples, we have to learn how to navigate that stuff. So I would just say for people trying to keep the relationship healthy and strong and safe, it's, you know, if you haven't found that communication, or that method of communication that can invite a conversation rather than ignite or incite a conversation.
Yeah.
I think that is a guaranteed way to make your marriage, if not last longer, certainly be more peaceful and welcoming, right? It's like, I don't want to fight with my wife. I don't want to incite her. I don't want to ignite any anger in her. I want to invite conversations with her. And I think we've both done a good job of finding ways to invite each other to conversations that can spurn growth. And oftentimes that means looking at ourselves first. So I might come to her and say, you know, something you said, it kind of ruffled my feathers. And I went and I asked myself, why did that bother you? Why did that bother you? What is it about it that bothered you? And I realized, you know, it has something to do with me as a kid. It has nothing to do with you, Jenny. And so I worked on that, and I wanted to share that with you. And I really don't have anything to say about what you said. And she'll go, oh, wow. And oftentimes then she'll reflect on something about her and say, I didn't realize when I said that it could bother you. So I'm sorry. And I want to think about why I said it that way. And it's interesting. I was really thinking this. And so we invite conversation. And that often avoids us inciting anger in each other or igniting a flame in each other that we didn't mean to ignite.
How have you guys not written a marriage book? You know, tips on marriage. That's profound, man. That's
we should and we probably could, and we would probably like to incorporate other advice from many of the couples that we know and many of the couples that comment on our Instagrams when we post things of how to keep our marriage hot. You know, we often get people saying, I've been married 35 years and here's how I do it. You know, the secret to the book would be to get those people to help us too, and to participate
it would be, too, right? Be super cool. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't frown at their advice or their comments. We love reading them and we welcome them. But you know, Dean, we're kind of busy doing a lot of other stuff. So, it's hard to sit down and write a book.
Yeah, there's plenty of time for that. Plenty of time for that. So this coming Thursday will be New Kids on the Block Day, as proclaimed by then-Governor of Massachusetts, Michael Dukakis. Yeah. Are there big celebrations, big things going on for the kids this year?
Well, here's the catch, you know, is that he only proclaimed that one day in 1989 as New Kids on the Block Day. Technically, it's over. It was over back then when April 25th came along, 1989. But thanks to our incredible fans, and honestly, thanks to social media, they kind of made it a thing again.
Yeah.
Every April 24th, they would start celebrating it again. And we just kind of decided, why not celebrate it with them every year? So every year we try to do fun things and release a song or something, do something to celebrate the day with them because it means so much to them. And as a consequence now, it means so much to us, right? I think on that day way back then, it was like, it was cool. We were with the guy who almost became president and was the governor of our state for most of our childhood. And it was a really cool thing, but you know, to have a day named after us. But honestly, we were just like, we were kids, you know, we were babies and we couldn't really appreciate it until perhaps all these years later and seeing how much it means to our fans has given us a new found and very profound gratitude for the occasion. And, you know, and the fact that we've lasted 36 years, which is probably 35 years longer than everyone said we would, probably helps us to feel good about celebrating it as well.
Yeah. So what do you guys have planned? I heard a Vegas residency is right around the corner.
Yeah, we've announced our Vegas residency. So one of the things we're going to do is our fans, you know, they know how New Kids are and they know how much we love to hang out with our fans. So we've sort of told them to be ready for a lot of incredible events when we do our residency outside of the show itself. And so they've been waiting anxiously to hear about what those events are. So we're going to announce some of those. We're going to release some nostalgic music stuff and a few other announcements of things that will be just fun. And then we'll engage on social media all day. I'm sure I'll spend hours and hours, commenting and going back and forth and sharing moments with fans and stuff like that. So we still... the fans really are the reason we're still here. You know, we work hard as a band on the relationship and keeping this thing going. But without them, there's nobody to perform to, right? I don't think me and the other four guys would sit in an empty music hall singing songs for 35 years if there weren't the most amazing fans there waiting for us, screaming along and singing every word. So they've made this journey what it is. And, you know, everything we do now, the residency, I've been working on it, gosh, since December, I think, maybe even earlier, getting the music ready and building the show and all that stuff. You know, it's important for us to give back to our fans and keep making it feel new. A lot of what we do is based in nostalgia, and we celebrate that and we honor that and respect that, but we also respect our fans' passion for the band and their hard-earned dollars. And they spend a lot of their time and energy, effort, and resources on us. And it's incredibly important for us to give back and make every experience of them as special as it can be, and not take them for granted, rather the opposite, you know. give everything we can to them.
So I was just, you know, going back through the files and the history and all that, and I can't believe, first of all, I can't believe you guys have been doing this for 36 years. That's stunning. But also, it's the 35th anniversary of Step by Step. That's incredible.
It is. And it's a great album. Hard to believe it's that old. I'm actually looking for a picture. I'm going to find this picture while we're talking. I'm going to show all your Chicagoland viewers this picture. It's pretty funny. But, you know, Step by Step, the album was huge, you know, moment in our careers. You know, we didn't know how long this thing was going to last. And after the success of Hangin' Tough, we had no idea what would happen next. And when we put out Step by Step and it was received so well, it just, you know, we avoided the sophomore slump. And that album, you know, it's still a great source of pride for us and a great source of great music for us that we still play in concerts to this day. Here's the thing I was going to show you. We always remembered this show that we did in, oh my gosh, this might have been in 1988, but it was at the Colonies, 13 Colonies. And I remember the show because a bunch of the DePaul Blue Demons came to see us.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it says New York City's hottest performers, New Kids on the Block. Of course, we're from Boston, but this was so funny. We all remember that. I sent it to the new, a fan gave me this at Wahlburgers a few weeks ago. A fan from Chicago. And she said, I was there, you know, and I said, we all remember that show because the players from DePaul came to hang out. And I remember it was one of our first times coming to Chicago and we walked to that old classic McDonald's downtown.
Oh, yeah.
It was so cold. And I was like, oh, my God. I mean, I thought Boston was cold. I could never live in this city. And cut to 36 years.
It turns out.
I've been here for over a decade with my wife who grew up right down the street from that McDonald's, and I couldn't be happier.
So what's the latest with Blue Blood now? I've read that the fans are, you know, starting a letter campaign, and they're trying to get it back on CBS. I've read that you're going to do a spinoff. What's the latest on all this?
Yeah, it's actually both things. I think are one. I think probably led to the other. You know, the fans were campaigning to save Blue Bloods, and the cast were campaigning to save it. We all wanted to save it. We all thought it had a lot of life left, and we all were very passionate about trying to get it back on the air. In fact, I think when it went off the air, we were just kind of waiting, like maybe Netflix is going to call or maybe another rival network is going to call and say, hey, this show still has legs in it. Let's keep it going. And those calls never came. And I actually made a call to the network one day and said, what are we doing? Why aren't we keeping the show going? And they said, we have actually another idea of how we can keep this show going, and it would be the first of potential other spinoffs, and or not spinoffs. I mean, we're not even calling it a spinoff. It's really the Blue Bloods universe. You know, it's there's a world, there's a great big world out there beyond just this little house in Brooklyn where the Reagan family lived for all those years. And you know, the idea was, you know, would you be interested in exploring Danny Reagan and Danny Reagan in life after Blue Bloods? And, you know, for me, at first it was difficult to say yes, because it was like, I don't know, you know, I love Blue Bloods. And I love Blue Bloods so much that, you know, I took pay cuts to keep it on the air, and so did the rest of the cast. And we would have done it again. You know, we would have done whatever we could to keep that show going. And, you know, I mean significant pay cuts. You know, it wasn't just like the actors just, you know, giving a little salary back. I mean, we took significant pay cuts and would have done it again, I think, to keep the show going. But the economics just they weren't there for the show to keep going. And I eventually started seeing this new Boston Blue show as a, rather than as something that wasn't going to be Blue Bloods. I started seeing it as a tremendous opportunity to keep the history and the legacy of the show alive. And when I started to meet with the producers and Jerry Bruckheimer, who's a TV icon, you know, and they were so receptive to so many of my ideas about what we could do in this new show, I realized this really is a way to carry on the legacy and tradition of Blue Bloods in a great way.
We're looking forward to you guys coming back to Chicago to perform. We're looking forward to the Vegas residency and all that's going to come with that. I always appreciate you're so generous with your time with us.
It's a pleasure.
You're a good pal, man. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Same. And you've been from day one of my presence here in Illinois. You've been a friend and a supporter from day one, and everybody at WGN has, but you especially.
Pretty easy to be friends with him and to be nice to him. He's such a nice guy. Donnie Wahlberg, New Kids on the Block Day this past Thursday. Schwani, have I mentioned that we have the greatest listeners in the world?
We have both mentioned, and Andy, all three of us have mentioned we have the greatest listeners in the world.
Exceptionally good on Sunday morning, though.
And they have been exceptionally wonderful today.
Yeah, the listeners on the other shows, they're okay. They're okay. This show, spectacular.
They continue to write in exuberant praise.
Here's one that says, Dean, it's Mary and Dave from North Georgia listening. We used to live in Ottawa. Love your show. Love Schwani.
Excellent. Wow. Fabulous.
Somebody texted earlier how handsome Schwani is. They looked up. So we're going to have a whole series of beefcake photos.
A calendar is coming soon.
Yeah, the Schwani calendar. The Schwani swimsuit edition.
Calendar. And you wearing your tights, right?
Yeah, and my kitty cat calendar. Andy, you're going to have to figure out a theme for yours.
I'm just going to be laughing in the background of every shot.
Maybe do a calendar with Hamp and OB.
Hey.
Yeah, we should do
that's
that.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. Get those guys back in their old uniforms.
That's brilliant. Oh.
Yeah, I have one of each of their uniforms, actually.
Be very cool. Yeah. 217 area code is asking, what time is your pot talk segment on?
That was last week.
They were talking about that last week.
That may be why our listeners are so spectacular. They're blown out of their minds while they listen.
So what are we all bringing in for show and tell next week?
Well, we know you've got all kinds of.
I've already got several ideas.
Bring in those headphones.
Schwani's okay. House is like a flea market.
Actually, you're not far off.
He's got tube socks everywhere. He's got used tires. I don't know. Does it make sense to do show and tell on radio?
No. Well, that's why we have the web. We can post the pictures.
Well, that's true. That's true.
And I did.
I bring in pictures that pertain to the far-flung forecast every chance I get. Didn't have any for today, but we've done it in the past.
Let's all bring something for show and tell next week.
Okay. All right.
We'll think of something. Got a nice card also from Houston, Texas, listening to the show.
Cool.
I enjoy your radio show every Sunday. A suggested topic, I would enjoy hearing people telling you what their all-time favorite film is.
Oh, that's good. It's always good.
Mine is the 1939 version of The Women. Have you ever seen that movie, The Women?
I have not. No.
It is spectacular.
Who's in it?
Rosalind Russell, Joan Crawford.
Yeah, it would be good.
Norma Shearer, and all as young actresses. This is before any of them were super famous. Yeah, and it's an entirely female cast. Really good movie.
From 1939.
Huh? Yeah.
The Women.
I love that movie, too. And also, she sent me a deviled egg recipe because she heard us talking.
Hey, wonderful.
She heard me talking about my mom's deviled egg recipe.
Okay.
Yeah. The Schwani still hasn't tasted.
No. Like I said, I didn't get any.
Yeah. No, too bad. Life's full of disappointments.
It sure is.
We know.
Never been invited to the TV station either.
This is from Marilyn in Houston, Texas.
We know Marilyn, and she's one of the best listeners out there. I've had the pleasure of meeting her.
Oh, look at you.
And always great to hear from her.
Cavorting with the listeners on the side.
Always great to hear from her.
Oh. What have you and Marilyn done?
Well, okay, I hope I have this right. In 2016,
I did not expect Andy. I did not expect an answer to this.
I didn't either.
My dad and I were headed to Carbondale to cover the eclipse that year.
Yeah.
So that would have been 2017, I guess. And we stopped to do the far-flung forecast in Odell, Illinois.
Okay.
And we were on a stretch of good old Route 66. Right. There's a gas station there that's now, if it's not 100 years old yet, it's pretty close.
You know the show ends at 1 o'clock.
Right? I know that.
Oh, okay.
So it's only 12, 11.
This is the short version.
11 minutes after 12 o'clock.
Just check.
And I was standing out, you know, outside the car, talking to you and doing the far-flung forecast, and a lady came out of this gas station. I thought, oh, we're probably trespassing or something.
We're in luck.
So she came over to me, and she said,
hey, good-looking, I'll be back to pick you up later.
No, she said, are you Schwanny? And I said, yes, I am. She said, well, we were just listening to you in the museum there.
Wow.
We listened to WGS. She introduced herself, and we took pictures, and Dad was in the car, and you got out. I'll never forget that. So she was also nice enough to write a card when Dad passed away, and a couple other times, Christmas cards here and there. So always a pleasure to hear from her.
She sent a very nice card.
Yes,
along with
her
letter.
Today. Yep, yeah. I think she comes here to visit relatives that live. You know, Odell is south of Joliet.
Yeah.
So that's where
she's in Houston, she was visiting. Texas now.
Lives there. Yeah.
She's in Houston and sent me a nice card with a little bunny on it and, and a little puppy.
Aw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You going to dress up like a little bunny rabbit
I'm
now?
I'm staying with the kitty cat theme. I think that's a good look for me.
You'll have to open the show with meow, 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 meow.
Exactly. Oddly, people have been sending me their favorite kitty cat songs in the last hour to go along with that.
How about the Tom Jones song?
What's new, pussy?
Yeah, that would fit right in.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
That would fit right in. Okay. Hey, you were on a roll there. Do the rest of the song.
The classical portion of our program. Pretty fancy, eh, Schwanny?
Beethoven. For Elise.
Is that how you pronounce that? Für?
Für Elise. Für Elise.
Für Elise.
The umlaut over the U.
With the double dots.
The double dot. That's an umlaut.
That's an umlaut?
Umlaut. Yeah.
Umlaut. I'll take mine with cheese.
Yeah.
I love an umlaut. I love a nice spinach umlaut.
Yes.
This song was composed by Ludwig von Beethoven.
The man.
On this day in 1810.
Wow. Okay, you've got that down. I didn't know that.
How about that on Casey's Countdown? Hey, it's a long-distance dedication.
Very much so.
This has to be one of the most recognizable yet unknown songs.
Well, it was in the Peanuts shows, you know. Linus, I guess, the guy, the keyboard player, he was always playing it. But everybody knows the melody.
Everybody knows the melody.
Yeah.
Right, that's what I mean. It's very cool. I like stuff like this.
And now you know the rest of the story.
It's part of this day in music history. I like stuff like this, where we learn about... Imagine, you know, it's 1810. Beethoven is sitting at the piano. And he goes, hey, let me try this. No, let me try this. Let me try this. And he comes up with this.
Mm-hmm. And he was also losing his hearing.
Losing his hearing, right. But, you know, like all the familiar melodies that we know from Beethoven and the, you know, many of the classical composers that stay with us hundreds of years later.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
He had the ability also to work on two or three different pieces of music at the same time. Some of the notebooks that he had, the sketchbooks, you know, he'd work on this and he'd quit for a bit and do something else and come back to it. And, oh, I'm going to work on this one now.
What kind of genius is
amazing.
That?
Just incredible.
You like to have that kind of genius. You know, I've often said that, you know, I don't know a lot about classical music or opera, but what I do know, I learned from Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Yes. Now, do you know the actual name of that?
I did, but I'm just looking it up here.
It's The Ride of the Valkyries.
Of course it is.
That was my next guess.
And it is from an opera.
Which opera would that be?
Die Walküre by Richard Wagner.
Look at you.
So there you go.
You are. I'm trying to find an actual version of it here.
There's all kinds of them. You won't have any problem finding one.
Well, the search phrase that I put in was kill the rabbit. So oh.
Well, you didn't spell rabbit right.
Well, I should have put wabbit.
Wabbit.
Yeah, with a W. They frequently used classical music in Bugs Bunny cartoons.
All the time. Yep.
And I suspect because it probably was free to use.
Now, that's the Flying Dutchman.
I like Kill the Wabbit better.
Yeah, this is a different opera.
This is too dark for me. Yeah. It's scaring me.
It's kind of a scary story, too.
It's kind of scaring me a little bit, yeah. I need something lighter than that. Now, what's this? This is something, right?
Yes. Barber of Seville Overture. Rossini.
You are amazing, Schwani. You know that? You are amazing. Does anybody mind if I just sit here and watch Bugs Bunny cartoons for the rest of the show?
Well, it's given the fact that it's on radio and they can't see them.
Even better.
But you can hear the music.
I think you can, you know, still enjoy it to some extent.
Oh, yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
All right. Get a little We're the Boys of the Chorus.
And we started the show off with We Are the World.
Well,
What other program does that variety of music?
There is no other show that covers the depth and the scope.
We have show and tell.
Of what
we wear different outfits.
No other show has had Bozo the Clown on the show, one of the new kids, Beethoven.
Nowhere else.
We cover it all.
Nowhere else.
And yeah. Dressing like cats.
Yeah, and my kitty cats. My old kitty cat honk that I did.
And Green River.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. This has been an award-winning show today.
Wasn't there a Creedence Clearwater Revival song, Green River?
Da, 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 Green River.
Da-da-da-da.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. The We Are the World to which we were referring... this was the day that the song We Are the World hit the number one spot, believe it or not, 40 years ago. Mm. It's incredible. Then when we look back on it, the impact that that song has had, the staying power that it's had, et cetera, really quite amazing. Andy brought up that documentary,
Greatest Night in Pop,
that is must see. If you remember, you know, that song and the impact that it had back in the day, truly amazing, truly, truly amazing. So that was, believe it or not, 40 years ago today.
I have to see this. I haven't seen the documentary yet.
Oh, it's really good.
No. Is there footage from the studio when they were recording it?
That oh, it's going to take better. You inside this documentary. Who was supposed to be on it? Who didn't make it? Prince was supposed to be.
Yes, he was
in the documentary.
And he didn't. He didn't show.
He didn't show up, and they didn't know if he was going to show up or not. You know, there were no cell phones really back then. Nobody was texting. And it was just, is he going to show up? Is he not going to show up? He was invited. He's not here.
Oh, man.
Never showed up. So the part, he was supposed to do one of the solo lines. And, Prince didn't show up. And that's how Huey Lewis got that one solo line in the song, because Prince didn't show up.
It's crazy.
Marshall Tucker was supposed to be in it, the Marshall Tucker
Band, yeah, yeah.
He was supposed to be in it, and because there is a line, I guess, in the song that's Swahili, he said, "No good old boy has ever sung anything in Swahili. I'm out of here." And he left.
Oh, really?
And he left.
Yeah.
He just split.
And that was put in, Stevie Wonder requested that.
Yeah, Stevie Wonder requested the Swahili part. Yeah. There's all kinds of things you'll learn about the song. Should we play the whole song?
Why not?
It's a great song.
If you can.
Yeah. And you know, the interesting part about that, too, is that what came out first was Band-Aid in the UK. They did that Do They Know It's Christmas back in 84.
This was the American response to that.
So Bob Geldof and I think Bono and Sting were involved in that as well. And then the American version came out with Lionel Richie and Quincy Jones, basically.
Yeah.
With an assist from Michael Jackson.
Sheila E. was supposed to be part of this whole thing. She backed out. It's fascinating. This documentary is stunning. So check that out. When you think about all the money that they raised for humanitarian efforts, for hunger around the world, for people who have no food. It was an amazing project. And by the way, you can still donate to those organizations who are probably in as much, if not greater, need today, with aid being cut off to a lot of places that provided humanitarian relief. Whatever donation that you can make, if you're so inclined, you can do it through Zelle. You can do it through the email address gifts@usaforafrica.org. You can send a check. If you go to globalexchange.org, they also can accept your donations to help hungry people around the world. There is also the WeAreTheWorldFoundation.org. Several places where you can make donations if you're so inclined to help people who are starving around the world. And if you love that song, geez, I forgot how much I love that song and the different when you watch the video and you see all the people who are participating in it. It's quite moving. And it's all a part of this documentary, which is on Netflix right now, by the way, and definitely worth a watch. The documentary on the making of that song that's called The Greatest Night in Pop. Highly, highly, highly recommended. And this coming week on the WGN-TV Morning News, we're going to be sharing some of our A-list interviews with the stars, including Kerry Washington. She stars in a new motion picture with actor Omar Sy. It's an action movie, straight up, action movie. We've never seen Kerry Washington like that before. But we talk about the movie. We talk about lots of things. Omar Sy is a French actor. So I took the opportunity to ask him for a favorite recipe that we Americans should be eating. You know, French cuisine is so world-renowned. And he gave me the name. I don't recall what it is right now, but it's a French veal stew which he says is very, very common in France among, you know, the average French family. They would make this stew all the time, I guess. And he told me, you know, he gave me some basics about it. I looked it up, and it's one of the things that I'm going to be recreating on my TV cooking segment in the next couple of weeks based on his recommendation. This coming Wednesday, I'm going to be making a Mexican flan. Never made flan before, but I looked it up. I talked with some friends who are of Mexican descent, and they've given me some good suggestions, some recipes, things that their grandmothers used to make flan, that wonderful custard-like dessert. So I'm going to give it a whirl. We're going to try that this coming Wednesday in honor of Cinco de Mayo, which is coming up. Also, talking about grandmothers, Vince Vaughn, our old buddy Vince Vaughn, has a new movie that's going to be coming out on Netflix. I think it's May the 9th. It's right around the beginning of May. Tomorrow, actually, I'm going to New York, and I'll sit down and talk with Vince and also hit the co-stars in his movie, who include Talia Shire and Diane Keaton. Joe Manganiello is in the movie. It's about an Italian guy whose mother passes away, and he wants to honor his mother, so he opens an Italian restaurant and has some Italian grandmothers, nonnas, as the chefs in the kitchen. Except they can't get along. They all think that their recipes are the best. And there are, that kind of goings-on in the kitchen as he's trying to make a go of his restaurant. These Italian nonnas are, fighting who's got the best recipe. You don't put this in the recipe. You put that in the recipe. It sounds like it's going to be an adorable movie. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. But how relatable is that, though? You know, the idea of, what grandma makes is more delicious than anything else. That's really the concept behind this movie. And one of the things that we'll explore when we talk with Vince and all of the actresses who play the actual nonnas. We only have a few minutes left in the show here today, but I do have time to take a few calls. If you, tell me what your grandmother made the best that you try to recreate, and either you've nailed it or you still haven't been able to quite figure out, how to make it quite like your grandma did. I do this all the time. When I come across recipes, I try to recreate them, and they're not the same as the way my mom cooked them. Or, my mom learned from my grandmother, her mother, the recipes, and I still remember, often when I go to a lot of restaurants, you can tell whose grandma, whose nonna, has had an influence on the kitchen in a lot of these restaurants. One of my favorite examples of this is from the restaurant Tofano's Vernon Tap, which is, in the Little Italy neighborhood. I've been going there for years, and I've always said that their eggplant parmesan is the best that I've ever had in my entire life from anywhere, from Chicago, New York, anywhere in Italy. The eggplant that they serve at Tofano's is the greatest. And the recipe comes from the owner, Joey DeBono's Nona, from his grandmother, who used to live right next door to the restaurant. In fact, they had a window built from Nona's house next door into the restaurant. And she would make pans and pans and pans of the eggplant parmesan, open up the window between the restaurant and her house, pass it through, and they would serve it in the restaurant. That's Nona cooking. Yes, that's literally Nona cooking. But that's apparently what this movie is about. And, we are going to be talking about that over the next couple of weeks with Vince Vaughn and the actors and actresses. And we're going to create some Nona cooking on my TV cooking segment here. Yeah, I only have like about a minute or so left. But Judy, how about you? Good afternoon now.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I had just turned the show on, and you're talking about the Italian grandmas. Ha ha ha. Well, we just finished Passover,
yeah.
And if you could just sit at a table and listen to a bit older Jewish people. No, my grandmother's gefilte fish was like this.
Yeah.
Did she? You know, mine was better. My grandmother's was better, and she served it like this.
Sure.
Or what if you bought the gefilte fish in the store, what brand? No, this brand was better. If you bought your matzah, it was that brand.
Yeah.
So it's sort of across the board. You didn't have to be Italian because...
It's so relatable, right? It's so relatable.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, my grandmother's gefilte fish, and my grandmother did ground the horseradish with no, the best one was this, and to the point where, okay, enough. You know?
Yeah. There's something very, very emotional about it, though. I mean, it's food, it's delicious, but it really strikes an emotional chord, doesn't it,
especially when it's a holiday and sure. There are certain foods
sure.
eaten on that holiday. It
yep.
brings out memories, the traditions, and kind of what you'd like to pass on
exactly.
to the next generation
yeah,
as it was passed on to us.
I think that's what this movie is about. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
I saw a clip for
yeah.
it. It looks very
cute. It looks cute. It does look cute. I'm looking forward to it, and we'll talk about it over the next couple of weeks. Thank you for calling, and thank you for the memories on that.